Welcome to Stories with Briscoe and Bradshaw. That's Briscoe. I'm Bradshaw. And when cable television first went nationwide, that's when wrestling first went nationwide. And there was one star that carried it all across the nation, hotter than any baby face in the wrestling business has ever seen up till that point. Everybody talks about one guy. That is Mr. Tommy Wildfire Rich, the wild-eyed Southern boy. Tommy, great to have you on the show.
Hey, thank y'all for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
I want to ask you, first of all, about the most important thing ever. How about that time where Gerald Briscoe and Michael Freebird Hayes ran over you in a parking lot? What the heck happened? You're the hottest baby face in the country, and they run over you.
We was in Parkersburg, West Virginia, and they was going to climb the mountain. And I wanted to climb it with them, and hell, they took off, and I ran. They hit me, and knocked the side window out, and kind of spoiled climbing the mountain. But anyway, I got in. yeah, that's some crazy stories back then.
Now here, John. Here, let me set this. This is the hottest guy in wrestling in the entire United States of America and North America, probably, because WTBS had just become the super station. And Tommy, you were there in the beginning, the transformation. I mean, we went from 1 week of being a local regional promotion and to the next week being just a national splash. I mean, we were everywhere. And things changed so drastically for us being a talent, even, you know, and walking through airports and just the everyday life. All of a sudden,
yeah,
you weren't that local TV wrestler. You were a United States superstar. Walk us through that trend, how it felt for you and, you know, what it meant to wrestling at the time.
Well, it was just, I mean, you know, back then, Ted Turner, I mean, he was cable before cable was cool. I mean, you know, there were people trying it, but Ted Turner, he come in, he did it. And I think what really saved him, he had the Atlanta Braves and he had Georgia Championship Wrestling. And with the Braves, they wasn't doing very good back then, but you know, that was his team and he plugged them and, just Georgia Championship. I come in and of course, when I come in, the first night I was there, the old City Auditorium, I wrestled Abdul the Butcher. He beat me in 30 seconds. And anyway, Jerry told me, he said, son, if you see it ain't going to work out, he said, just call me and I'll get you back home. And I said, Lord, it might be time to go home. But anyway, I stuck it out and only put me and Tony Atlas together. And we were the first Salt and Pepper tag team and won the titles. So it was, I mean, I just was young, you know, I was like 19, man, just cruising, you know, I was a country boy. It was all new, man. You get to come be on at 17. And like Jerry said, you was like Terry and Dory come in to do TV. And Terry told me one day, he said, I got so mad the other day, they were going to Albuquerque to wrestle. And they pulled in the store and he said, these little gals come running out wanting to know where Tommy Rich was. You know, so it was such a big deal, you know. And of course, back then, I didn't realize it. Today, you know what it was, you know. But it was and Mr. Barnett, one of the greatest promoters, you know, probably the best one I ever worked for, to be honest. And he just took it, treated us like gentlemen. And it took off, you know, like Jerry said. I mean, it was. And pretty much overnight, I mean, I'd been there for just a short while. And then when it went, you know, across the country, I mean, we'd get mail from everywhere. And it was big time. I mean, I talk about big time wrestling. That's when Georgia turned to big time wrestling.
You know, and I wonder when it's something, you know, people see Ted Turner and everything, but you remember, I mean, we did those TV tapings, what, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, right? We were at WTBS on Saturday morning. John, what a brutal
thing. Have you been to bed yet?
Oh, no.
That's the story of Friday night in Atlanta, like you said, either at the City Auditorium in the early days or the Omni. Now, when we went to the Omni, we were pretty much, you know, the big thing there because the Braves sucked at the time and the Hawks were sucked and all the professional sports in Atlanta suck. And the wrestling was like a lot of different local territories where the wrestlers were basically the start of the local town. And so we'd have Atlanta on Friday nights. And you know, I mean, Atlanta's Atlanta. You're going to go out and you're going to have an adult beverage or two after the matches, right, Tommy? No matter where you're at. So, you know, Friday night, we would get going. We would have to be at TVS at the studios at, I believe it was, 7 o'clock in the morning and start taping around 8:30, 9 o'clock.
It seemed like it started at 8 or 9, you know. I mean, it was, you know, and you had to be there ready to go, too. You know, of course, Friday night in Atlanta, it didn't end until about 4, 3 or 4, 5 in the morning. So you'd be, I see Wahoo McDaniel one morning we come in and, Lord have mercy, he'd been out all night and then run his car into a wall. Shoot, he made it on into TV, had dried blood on his head there, wrecked his car. Because everybody wanted, you didn't want to miss that Atlanta TV, because it did. It shot you around the country, man. And it was, I mean, like, well, everybody wanted to come be on it, like Big Dust. I mean, he'd come in, because what it did, it just built you up as a bigger star in these other territories because people could see it nationwide.
And at that time, the promoters, you know, the big thing was, oh, cable TV is going to kill professional wrestling. It's going to kill it. And it killed it as we knew it back then, but it just exploded it nationwide everywhere. And like Tommy said, promoters like out in your neck of the woods, Fritz would call, hey, I want my boys on your TV. Kansas City would send guys in. Everybody was sending guys to Atlanta to get on that Atlanta TV because it was so hot and so big. So Tommy was the guy that kind of just stood out among everybody else and had that Southern hillbilly charm, as I call it there, and that charisma. And he would get on there and those young ladies would melt at his feet. I've seen him walk into hotels and the women just go crazy. There's Tommy Rich is like.
His grannies love me too, man. Don't forget about them grannies. I seen them beat on them up and came many a night.
Well, you know what? Probably what bothers you the most now, you go to an autograph session and it'll walk a nice looking young lady and she'll say, Tommy, you were my grandmother's favorite wrestler.
You're right. You're telling the truth.
Yeah, but we would do, like you said, John, we would sometimes those nights in Atlanta wouldn't end until you walk into the TV studio. We'd do what? 2 tapings that morning in Atlanta. And Turner was usually there to think about it. And some of us, like Tommy, myself, my brother Wahoo and Dusty, Ted would see us dressing in the hallways, and they said, come into my office, guys, and dress in my office.
Yeah.
Right? So we were dressing in Trinity clothes in Ted Turner's office, one of the most powerful men in the world. We were changing into our wrestling gear, back into our street gear. And there were no showers there either, but at least he had a sink where you could do one of those.
Get wet, yeah. But yeah, it was, yeah, wet, I mean, right. But of course, and back then he knew that was his bread and butter too, the rest. I mean, because that's what I really believe that's what made 17.
Tommy, we lost you there. Like, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question while your daughter is figuring out how to get you back.
Well, my wife will love you. That was my wife. That wasn't my daughter.
Oh, your wife. Well, she's young looking like your daughter, you know. So
yes,
I just figured, how did you get so lucky? But anyway,
Jerry's still sweet talking to the ladies. That's pathetic, Jerry. That sweet talking.
Your daughter's back on. Thank goodness.
Tommy, what we need. We had Stan Hansen on here, and it took him an hour, and we was trying to figure out how to get him on. It was like, it was the worst tech show you've ever seen in your life. Jimmy Garvin took about 30 minutes to get on, and he flies a plane.
Lord have mercy. I seen Jimmy Garvin. I don't know. It's been 4 or 5 months ago, but I ain't seen him in forever. And he was sitting at this table. We just autograph signed it somewhere, and he was there. And I swear, I didn't even know who he was. He kept looking at me, and I thought, why is this guy looking at me? And then finally he come up, and he said, you don't even know who I am, do you? I looked again. I said, no. He said, this is Jimmy Garvin. Of course, Then I knew who it was, but boy, he just looked completely different.
Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin might be something else now. Now he's just Jimmy
Garvin. Yeah. We've all in ages hit us all, I reckon.
You know, Tommy, one
thing. Tommy, I'm going to ask you a question. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but we were known at Hertz Rent-A-Car in Ohio. And we were actually barred from Hertz Rent-A-Car in Iowa. Not Iowa, but Ohio.
Yeah.
Did you wreck any of those Lincoln Continentals?
Yeah, we started it budget up at the top, and by the time we got through rent, we was down to rent a wreck a car, or rent a wreck, whatever we call. Yeah.
I told them. We were lucky to get those, weren't we?
I told them a brand new Lincoln. One night I got 3 DUIs in 2 nights, told them a brand new Lincoln. But it was wild up there too. I mean, we all, of course, Roddy Piper, he crippled one too, you know. We all had our turn. But them roads were just so curvy up there.
You know, people find it hard to believe these rental cars were used like bumper cars back in the day. I mean, Greg Valentine once hit me going about 90 miles an hour just for fun, just for the heck of it.
Oh, yeah. In that Harley race, he was the best at that. One night, everybody told me about it. I'm going down the road cruising at night, and all of a sudden, I feel something hit me. Hell, he got his lights off, and he pushing me about 100 miles. I was scared to death. Yeah, Harley was famous for that.
Yeah, Harley would sneak up on you. You wouldn't even have a clue. And how he knew it was you, I guess he was just hoping. But how he knew it was you, I know he couldn't remember the license plate number because he couldn't remember his damn name. But he'd get right up behind it. All of a sudden, you feel this whack. You get this whiplash. What the hell? Then you look and all you knew it was Harley back there. You're going 100 miles an hour and Harley pushing you down like a damn NASCAR Talladega going down Talladega straightway, man. It was wild.
Yeah. Shoot, the store, I mean, just getting to live. The wrestling was great. I mean, it was an honor to get in the ring with guys like you and Harley and, you know, because I was a youngster, man, and y'all took the interest in me, but just the camaraderie and the stuff, you know, after the matches and like, well, like when y'all and Dustin would come in, we'd always go to Country Roads. I remember one night we went to see old Jerry Lee Lewis, and he was about half dead. IRS to eat him up. He had to play. He played about 2 songs and he had to leave. Yeah, we used to have a great time, man. See, I'd have paid for that and got paid to just wrestle. You know, it was just, you know, you talk about living a dream, man. It's still, you know, you look back and us, I mean, 40 years later, I mean, folks still, you know, you go to these signings and many people know us as they do the new guys. So, you know, it's just back then, the 80s was a great time. The wrestling fans were great. I mean, and got to make a living just doing what you love for 40 years. It's a blessing. And, you know, the greatest fans in the world are wrestling fans.
Tommy, isn't that right? You know, Tommy.
There's the fact that Vince killed the territories. You know, which certainly he took over, you know, a big part of the world, and he was the one that ended up winning finally in the end. But it was cable television that killed the territories, right? Because somebody was going to win. If it wasn't Vince,
oh, yeah, somebody was going to do it. But I just think, I think, you know, there's a, you know, people say that the cable killed him, and I might have believed that too. But I sit back and I look at it now. I just feel like maybe territories had run their period. You know, everything has to change whether you want it to or not. And I think in order for wrestling to stay alive, it had to go from territories to the cable and just went nationwide. Because, I mean, you back then we'd go like here in Georgia. Every Monday night we was in Augusta, Georgia. Every Tuesday night she's in Macon, Georgia. Every Wednesday night, she was in Columbus, Georgia. Then on Thursday, we'd be either in Athens or Rome because it wasn't big enough to carry a weekly show. So they do them every other week. And then Friday, we'd do Atlantic City Auditorium. And then on Saturday, we'd hit that TV at about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, do it. Then you'd have to get in the car and haul butt to Columbus TV because it was a live TV. You wouldn't even have time to change sometimes. Just have to jump in the car and go and grab you something at Mickey D's or somewhere. Then you go somewhere Saturday night, and then you'd have Sunday off. But then they found out they could draw on Sunday, So then you'd wrestle about 7 days a week, 10 times out of the week, you know. So it was, you know, and it just, I really think, I always thought that cable, you know, and it might have been a part of Kelly, but I just think that territories had run its cycle, you know, because, I mean, just coming there every week and trying to do something different, you know, just that's hard. You know, them bookers that did them jobs, you know, hats off to them because it's, you know, it's just that's a real hard thing to do.
Tommy, I think you're exactly right. You know, the cable TV and Vince and a lot of other people get blamed all the time. But if these guys would really go back in history and check the status of the territories during that time, I mean, I'm old as can be, and I know that. And Layfield will remind me of it every 30 minutes. But
he's also from Oklahoma, Tommy, but don't hold that against him, okay? He's my friend. But he just happens to be Oklahoma.
But the business.
I'm going to run for office, and I'm going to build a wall, not on the southern border, between Texas and Oklahoma.
No.
And I'm going to have Oklahoma pay for it, Jerry Briscoe.
We ain't paying for it. But anyway, John, let's get back to business here. Hey, Tommy, forgive him because he's going to run for political office.
Everybody knows that.
He's a fast talker.
Everybody knows how corrupt the state of Texas is, and John Layfield is probably the leader of the pack down there. But in those days, I mean, you know, the talent roster that we had in Atlanta, besides the guys coming in for special shots, I mean, it was the Hall of Fame of wrestling. I mean, you know, you said a few names a while ago, Wahoo's. And you know, Andre would come in, you know, Dusty would come in, you know, the Road Warriors. I mean, the selection of guys that we had to work with and work around was just amazing. I mean, it was amazing where everybody could be at main event on a certain night.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, each territory, I mean, it had its top crew of guys that could draw money anywhere, you know. I mean, and I think that's what's hurt the with cable. You lost such great talent. I mean, because, you know, you might be working, say, Georgia, and somebody else be working in Tampa, say, you, and you can make as good a living as I was here, you know, and that kept the crew of talent. I mean, and you'd go here and there, and everybody would switch up. I mean, back then, Texas had, I mean, three or four territories back then, you know. I mean, they had top crew of guys in each territory. So, I mean, and then you're underneath talent even. I mean, you could make a living even if you worked underneath. If you loved wrestling, you could make a decent living doing that, you know, and then maybe go to the next territory and get a break and boom, you was on top. Where the guys today, you know, you got one opportunity, that's it. You know, it's a different horse now than it used to be.
But, you know, all these territories that, you know, at the advent of cable TV, you know, check the record books. And we were all the territories, we were all starting to decline in attendance. You know, I mean, was the entrance. And like you said, I think we had become stale because we were having to be. And like you said, 52 weeks out of the year, we were in Tampa, we were in Miami. I mean, you know, and the same goes all over the country. So, When cable TV did hit, it was just fresh. It was a new concept. You could see different guys here and there, and you know, and it actually was starting to revive. I mean, North Carolina was starting to come back. Florida was starting to come back. You know, so it wasn't cable TV. It was just a lack of management, I think, during that time, and it wasn't the talent, because the talent was great. Because they were drawn when they come to Atlanta TV and get on there. Automatically, if somebody from Kansas City came and appeared on our TV, boom, the next 3 or 4 weeks, that territory was hot because those guys had been on that Atlanta TV. So it was just a unique time, a frame. We were so fortunate to come along at that time there.
Oh, the 80s, yeah,
and
man.
And be a part of it.
You know, I really think everything's a cycle. And you know, I think there's no blame on really nobody. I think it just, we was, I mean, wrestling was wrestling before the 80s, but I mean, it become just hotter than a firecracker. And of course, that's when Mr. Barnett and Ted Turner had the cable. But at the same time, Mr. Barnett, he would use guys and send to different territories. I mean, he didn't try to run nobody else's area or nothing else. And I think, I just think it just run its cycle. You know, I mean, it was a great time. And then people, shoot, I mean, and they still talking about it. So, I mean, we definitely left an impression.
You're exactly right. Guys wouldn't run against each other, you know, even with the cable TV. I mean, that was really the issue that my brother and I had, as you know, Tommy. I mean, we were the only reason we got to run at Michigan, Ohio, West Virginia, because the old Sheik Eddie Farhad had been in there and he burnt the damn place up. And if you remember, because you traveled with me a lot, the troubles that I would have when I go to radio station, our building, our promotional partner, hey, Sheik owes us $10,000. What do you go? Well, I can't do anything about that, but I can promise you that, you know, we're on the up and up. And we, you know, everybody, you know, thinking we're making all these loads of money there. But what we're doing with that money, we're investing in the next town, because we had to build up the jackpot to invest in that next town, because we go from Dayton over to Columbus, run into the same issues. So we'd have to take the Dayton money and prepay Columbus every week to build a trust factor up there.
Yeah.
When you guys came along, we started selling out every 2 weeks up there. Then we got that trust factor and all those advance deposits. But I think in Cleveland or one of those towns like that, we had to pay a 1 year in advance just to get the town for one shot, John.
Wow. Yeah, I remember. I mean, and that, I mean, God bless him. I mean, you know, but and then there again, he run it in the ground and things fell off too. But it was just a cycle run out, and y'all had to rebuild it all. I mean, it was like you said. And when we went up there, we were hotter than a firecracker. But getting them doors open to get up there, I'm sure, was a different story. Just what you're saying there. See, because none of us, I mean, I didn't know that, but I mean, I understand that. I'm sure he had a bunch of bills that he didn't pay, you know.
But those were, my point was, but those were the only three states that we could go to that wasn't occupied. I mean, we were looking at, we'd get those big booklets. I think I'll show them to you sometime. They get those big booklets of the ratings, the towns, and we get, each town broken down. Well, man, Cleveland's got 2 million households that we're hitting. Why aren't we running in Cleveland or Pittsburgh? Or, you know, we'd look at that. Well, so-and-so runs that town and we can't go in there because that's his town. Well, hell, he runs it once a year, but that's his town. We got 3 million viewers in the damn place here. Why can't we go? And you know, the loyalty of those NWA, one thing you got to give them, they had loyalty up to a point until they started losing money. But they were loyal as hell to each other and would not step on each other's feet. That's the reason they were so scared of cable, because they didn't know who would end up with it. And
that's true. I mean, you know, it was because Mr. Barnett could have done it before anybody. Like you said, I mean, when Eddie Farhead shut down, I mean, we went up and we busted it wide open. But the doors y'all had to get open to get in there, you know, that's a whole different story too, you know.
Hey, Tommy.
I remember like the books you talking about, the books and stuff. I remember, I used to travel with Jerry, you know. We had a little fun too. Yeah.
I think?
Yeah. Some of it's a blur. Some of it's hard to remember, but I remember a lot of it.
I spent a month one night with Jerry down in Tampa.
I heard
it was fun.
Yeah.
Hey, Tommy, when you first went to Atlanta, you got a little history here that's kind of unique. Gerald Briscoe was one of the first black and white, if not the first black and white tag team champions up in the Carolinas with Thunderbolt Patterson. You were the first there in Atlanta with Tony Atlas. I was one of the first with Ron Simmons. They had Coco and Owen earlier. And we weren't the first, but we were one of the first. Had the Dudleys and ECW. Was that uniqueness that you had with Tony Atlas? You had this wild-eyed, crazy Southern white boy, this charismatic character with this really good-looking, incredibly built guy that they put together. Was that uniqueness one of the reasons you think you got over so much as a singles because you were out there with Tony?
Well, I was just in a hell of a position. But me and Tony had our run together, and where I was so fortunate is like, and Tony did help me. I love Tony, you know, as much as I love my own brother. I mean, he used to carry my kids on his shoulder through the airports, you know. I mean, he was like family, and you know, I mean, we still talk now, and not as much as we probably should, but yeah, of course that helped me. But just getting to wrestle the talent that come through Atlanta, I mean, that helped me too. And I was different. I mean, you know, I mean, they had midgets, they had Andre, and then just, you know, it's like that today they put character names on guys. Well, back then, everybody you seen was a character. I mean, you had yeah. Baron Von Raschke, you know, you had Bruiser Brody. You know, everybody, I mean, you didn't have to kill a Carl Cox. I mean, that was just them. I mean, that was their personality. So they didn't have to change none. And they took an interest in a young kid as being me. And, you know, if it hadn't been for all the guys, I mean, you know, it wouldn't be no me. But where I was fortunate, I'd have a run like after me and Tony, then they put me in a single. So I'd have a singles run. The reason I lasted so long in Georgia, I'd do a wild in singles, and then Wahoo would come in, and I'd team up with Wahoo for, you know, 10, 12, 20 weeks, whatever it was, and then I'd go back to a single. So that kept my longevity really good there, I think. And just the people, and there again, the boys taking, just helping me, you know. It'd have been easy for them to say, F this kid, but they all did. They took interest in me and helped me, and of course, I listened and learned a lot too. And, you know, that's probably the proudest thing for me too, is just the guys in the business, you know what I mean? Because guys have trouble with guys, and I can honestly say maybe one or two guys that I had a problem, you know, that didn't think I should be where I was at, you know. But as a whole, you know, they all come in and help me because they knew we draw money. So, you know, I was just old cornbread kid that they love to see get beat up, but see me fight back, you know. And we never let them down. We always give them what they wanted.
Tommy, you mentioned some great guys there. You mentioned Wahoo McDaniels, and you mentioned a little earlier statement, the Palmetto Club there in Atlanta, Georgia, Country and Western Bar. Remember, it had the big horse on the top of it. Were you there when Dusty or Wahoo or Andre tried to climb up on that horse?
No, I missed that one.
You remember the horse, though, right?
Yeah, I remember the horse, yeah.
We were there one night, and Andre wanted to climb up on top of the building and get on top of John. Now, this is the Palomino horse, and Palomino Club is off the interstate there. And all you can see is this giant white Palomino.
Yeah, it's a big old horse.
And Andre wanted to climb up on top of the building and get on that horse and ride him. Of course, I think it was Dusty that was encouraging him to go up there. But between Jack and myself, we talked him into not going up there. But can you imagine a picture, Tommy, of Andre up there on top of there? You know, that club was a lot of trouble for a lot of guys.
Yeah. But you, we had a great time too. But Andre, God bless him. That's another, you know, another great one we've lost. I mean, but Andre, I remember the first time I met Andre, I just started wrestling. And I was in Louisville, Kentucky. And anyway, they asked me would I give Andre a ride back, because nobody wanted him to ride with him because they'd break his seats, they said. I said, well, I don't care if he rides back with me. And I just bought a new 90 Oldsmobile 98 Regent. And said, boy, I thought I was bad, you know. Anyway, so Frenchie was at the hotel, so we had to go back and pick him up. Well, as we're coming in, it's got like a horseshoe curb in there. I hit that curb on Andre's side, and that car bounced in the air. I thought, oh Lord, he picked a backhand me with a big old hand. He said, you okay, boss? Okay, because back then he just spoke a little bit of English. So anyway, we got Frenchie, and I'll never forget. I mean, my first impression is he said, what kind of beer you drink? I said, I drank them old Pony Millers back then. Well, they went in and got me an 8-pack from Louisville to Nashville. That was good for me. Hell, they come out, had me a case of ponies, and had Andre a case of quarts. But anyway, I put that little 7-ounce beer in my hand, and Andre had that quart in his hand. Hell, it looked like he had a 7-ounce in his hand. His dang hand was so big. I mean, I just was, you know, mesmerized at that. And then we became friends. Anytime he come to Atlanta, of course, Rick Martel and him was good friends. So anytime he come in, he always would look us up. Well, he'd always, we'd be sick, you know, drinking with him. So one night he come into the Omni, and he's going out. So me and Rick was really happy. He said, because everything closed at 12. So we thought, man, we got it made tonight. You know, we'll have a few drinks. And of course, Omni didn't get old about 10:30 or so. Anyway, 12 o'clock come. They said, last call. And Andre said, after hours bar. He knew where a damn after hours. We ain't even never heard of it. Stayed in Atlanta. And he said, we go to after hours bar, boss. Anyway, so we get in the car and go there. And we start drinking. Hell, I said, I knew we was going to get tore up. I said, give me a vodka grapefruit. Anyway, I drank that thing, and I slammed it down. I said, hey, boss, there wasn't even nothing in there. He looked at the bartender. He said, anyway, that bartender poured it again. It didn't have nothing but a little color to it. I drank it. It ended up that I finally got sick. Well, no, at 3 o'clock, they started cooking breakfast. Andre said, breakfast? I started smelling that stuff cooking. I got sick. I run in the bathroom. It had a bathroom stall and a urinal. Well, the bathroom stall was locked. I heard somebody, they was hollering for that Buick they sell. So I hit that little urinal. I was sick of the dog. Come to find out, it was Rick Martell in the stall. He was in there throwing up too. We ended up, they had a little L-shaped bench outside. I was laid on one. Rick was laid on the other one. Andre comes out and picks us up in his arm and carried us to the car. Yeah, Andre, he was there. Yeah, I loved Andre.
Hey, Tommy, going back to Gerald Briscoe and Michael Hayes running over you in a car, isn't that a felony?
Well, they'd have thought felony if they'd have hurt me. Mr. Barnett would have been mad at both of them.
Yeah, we'd both been fired. That's what I told damn Michael Hayes. I said, you know, he said, I bet we're inside the car as you're walking up the hill. Why do you got mad at us or something? We were across the street drinking. Just to clear things up, we did drink and drive back to the hotel. We parked at the hotel.
Yeah, we was at the hotel.
Across the street to another hotel and drank them dry, and I think we got asked to leave. So Tommy was mad and started walking up the hill, and Michael and I got in the car because we were too drunk to walk up the damn hill. And Michael elbowed me, Tommy. He said, I bet you won't run over Wildfire. I said, you want to bet? And boom. And like you said, the last thing I remember is you coming up over the damn windshield, breaking the rearview mirror, breaking. And I walked back, Tommy, okay? And you set up. Are we going to drink any more beer or something like that? Let's go. And you started, and you got mad. And you started, well, I don't know why you got mad for running over. But
I don't know why you got mad. Just got run over with the car.
Yeah, he walked on up the hill, went to his room. I can't lie, and still to this day, I guess I should apologize today. I'm sorry I ran over you. But I'm saying, man, I did. Freebird, you know, we just ran over the damn franchise out there.
Yeah.
Here we're coming back. And remember, I got that damn briefcase. I got like $35,000 in that damn briefcase because we'd hit a couple of spot shows and back in. You had to carry that cash around with you. So, I was worried I was going to lose that. So I had that damn briefcase handcuffed. And I could just imagine the damn cops coming in. Michael tells the story about the band coming over and making a challenge and Michael putting up the money in the briefcase on a takedown that I could take the damn guy down. Michael, it's me. I'm drunk. Wahoo McDonald, you had a lot of nights with Wahoo. I know you do. Do you have any memorable stories that we can tell on a family show? I guess not.
You was wrestling Columbus, Georgia, and both these acts out of Columbus. One day we had to do TV. My deal was always signing autographs and hugging the girls and all that. But Wahoo get mad. So anyway, he took off and left me. And I thought, I looked everywhere for him. I had to catch a plane back. And he got me a little snabus. I owed him some money for that. Anyway, I flew back. I had to get my wife to pick me up at the airport. And we hauled ass. It was up by Toccoa, Georgia, which was a pretty good haul. Drove up there and Wahoo, he just thought that was funny. said, "Why?" I said, "That's some bullshit, man." He said, "I just don't." He said, "I said, hell, I had to buy a ticket." This, that. He said, "Well, don't worry about that little package I got you. We even." But he just, he, everything was always. Then one night they were making, you used to go up Interstate 85 and they were cutting 185 over to Columbus. Well, they'd been working on it. And he decided one night, and my wife was with me even then, he decided we was going to go back to Interstate. It ought to be pretty much ready. Well, we get about halfway down. What it was trying to hurry up and get back to Atlanta for the bar. And anyway, we got about halfway down in the dang bridge. You couldn't get over the bridge because it's a big old concrete thing. So anyway, he looked over and there's an old logging road across. He takes this brand new Lincoln, son, and we go down this hill. And just a little bit, of course, I mean, they drove the big dump trucks across it, but I was scared to death. We hit that ramp, boy, and he had to punch it to get up that hill. I'm thinking, somebody seen this crazy shit, man. I mean, yeah, brand new Cadillac. He taking the shortcut to get home so we could go to the bar, you know. Wahoo, yeah, I love Wahoo too. Like on Wednesdays when we go to Columbus, I'd have to stop and pick him up sometimes because he knew all the guys on Stewart Avenue running car lots. He'd get a ride with one of them down to the golf course about halfway between Atlanta and Columbus, and he'd go down and play golf in bed all day. Sometimes it was good to pick him up, and sometimes it was bad because he'd be done lost a bunch of money, and he'd be madder than hell. And then one time, I'll tell you one more story on Wahoo, though. We went out to Texas, he was booking for Joe Blanchard. And anyway, my knee had blowed up. And he said, "Come on out here, man." I said, "Wahoo." I said, "I can't wrestle." I said, "You just waste your money." He said, "Well, I've done advertising. I need you to come." He said, "I'll fly your wife with you." I said, "Okay." Anyway, I got off the plane and he had a pill about as big as a half a dollar. You know, it was big. Anyway, broke it in four pieces. He said, "Here," he said, take a piece of this. Well, I took a piece, you know, didn't ask what it was, nothing. I just trusted Wahoo. Anyway, little Mikey will take it. So I take it. And he had some of his stuff called DMSO, you know, DMSO, you know, but it was the real shit that they put on horses' legs.
Right.
I'd rub that stuff up. Now you can't buy that. I'd rub it on my leg and you taste it in your mouth.
Yep.
We had like 300 miles to go. And by the time I got there, I took all four pieces of that pill and rubbed my knee down. Hell, I got in the ring and wrestled. You know, I got in the ring. I said, "Wahoo, I can't believe this." And then we stayed over in Brownsville, Texas. And he had some gal with him. And anyway, Terry was with me, and he was going to take a B-12 shot, stuck the needle in his butt, and the whole needle bit where no butt was stuck. Yeah, he was quite the character Wahoo was. Yeah, that's another one we've lost. You know, we've lost a bunch of great folks. I mean, and it's just an honor for me to got to know him and even know his story to tell about him. You know, it's just what a great business.
I knew you were a good friend with Dusty Rhodes, and you had a couple of set twos with Dusty, and you teamed up with Dusty. That was the thing about Dusty. Dusty would get a hot baby face, and Dusty would attach itself right to the guy's rear end, wouldn't get away from him until the guy started getting down. So I know you had a lot of partnership with Dusty through the years. Was he crazy to work with or what?
Oh, no, split up with him. So I never, you know, he never did really work the territory where me and him was like, together, you know, he'd come in and like we might team up the Omni or something, you know, but I mean, I love Dusty to shit. He bought me and him went to get my first pair of cowboy boots. So, man, I don't know if he tricked me or not, but he got me some of them to kill cockroaches in the head, in the corner with him on pointed toe. Yeah, but he said, "Boy, there's one you need right there." And shit, I listened to him, I bought him. Of course, I wore them out, too, so I guess they was all right. Yeah.
Tommy, you may be the only witness to this, the fight between Orndorff and Tony Atlas. I think both guys have claimed they won, but you saw it, right? What happened with the fight between Orndorff and Tony Atlas?
It was just steroids, I reckon. You know, just one word led one word led to the other about who was the toughest. And they just got out between two tractor trailers. And Tony got a bear hug. Paul bit him, and it was over. You know, it wasn't a whole lot to it. I mean, both the guys, I had a lot of respect for them, which I love Tony. And Paul Orndorff too. I mean, Paul and me, you know, we wrestled together some. It's a sad thing just to see that happen. You know, it ain't, you know, I just.
But Tony had to go to the hospital, right, for the bite.
Oh, yeah, he bit his ear. Yeah, that's like tetanus or something. Yeah, Tony was in the hospital 2 or 3 days from it. Yeah. Yeah. So it was, you know, it was just a bad, you know, just a bad thing. Just hate to see that stuff happen.
What all did you have? You know, it's really interesting to me that you wrestled mainly two main territories, right? Tennessee and Georgia. And you were a heel in one, a baby face in the other. Did the TVs never cross from TBS? How did that work out with you being a heel in one and baby face in the other?
No, they never did really cross. But I mean, of course, Atlanta TV went into Memphis, but the folks, but around the country, they Memphis was the only place they seen me healing in. And the reason that was is because in order to make any money, you had to wrestle Jerry Lawler, and he was the top babyface. So I just figured it'd be good to be a heel, you know. So, and which it did. It worked out real well for me there, too.
How bored did you get standing in the ring for about 6 hours when he had that hair match? I've been stuck in the ring before, I know what you went through. There ain't no way. It's boring. You can't get up. You can't stand up. You just
the good thing was I just got back from Japan, so I had that jet lag, and I had an air mattress and a 6-pack of beer under there. You know, I'd lay there for a while. I'd drink a beer, go to sleep, wake up, pee in a can, drink another. You know, but I didn't really wake up till the first match got in the ring. And that Memphis ring was so loud, and they took a bump on it. Hell, it was so loud. I raised up, hit my head on the bottom of, you know, them bars in there, hit my damn head. And for a minute, I thought, where am I? I didn't even know where I was at for a minute, you know, and finally come back. But I'll tell you what, it took us that night after all was said and done. Shoot, me and Austin Idol was in the ring for about 30 minutes after the match because the people were just mobbing the cage and stuff. They had to call for extra police. It was quite the angle.
Who gave you the cue to come out? The reason I ask is I've been in the ring before in WWE, you know, and you have a monitor under there, so you're able to see when your time is, you know, to come out or do something. But how did you know the time to come out underneath the ring? You're under there for, what, 6 hours, but you had to
come out. Yeah, Paul Dangerously, he was our manager, and he just dropped down on his knee and motioned me out.
Said, come out.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, I've been listening. You know, you listen to it, too. I mean, I could tell me, you know, so it was that referee got knocked down and boom. I mean, it was pretty, you know, I was ready to get out too, but yeah, it was quite different. Probably one of the strangest things I ever did in the wrestling business.
The match you had with Buzz Sawyer, I just watched it last night. I found it on YouTube. The Last Battle of Atlanta. Awesome match. There's no TV commentary to it. And they claimed that was one of the reasons for the Hell in the Cell, because you had the roof on the cell there in Georgia. And what an incredible match. And you sold the cage. You sold Paul Ellering. Ellering may have been the biggest one in the ring when they finally got him. And he was jacked.
He was, yeah. And he, you know, he was in that little cage up over the ring. You know, they had him in a cage up over the ring. And then they had the ring fixed where nobody could get in. So it was, yeah, it was, you know, I've been very blessed, man. I've been in some angles that are, you know, still talked about today. So, you know, I've just been real lucky, man.
Do you like working with Buzz?
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, of course, back then we was all buck wild running 100 miles an hour. So he wasn't too bad. And I just told him, I said, if you hurt me like you hurt some of my other boys, I said, I ain't going to be able to wrestle you. And so he never did really hurt me. Now, when Harley do that suplex on the floor, he'd always want to try. Like, if he'd seen a new move, he'd always want to try it out on me, you know. And so, but anyway, but he never really hurt me too much. But, we, I mean, you figure we'd run around the country for about 2 years. I mean, that's I was probably used to getting beat up by then anyway.
We had Stan Hansen on, and we're talking about, big moments that kind of make your career, because everybody kind of has one. You know, Stan said it was that 1981 match he had in the tennis courts with Andre the Giant, when he got to slam the Giant, they're rocking back and forth and made Stan in Japan forever. You kind of said the same thing. I heard an interview about Abdullah the Butcher, where you go in there and that first time with him, and you basically was a squash. And he says, one day I'm going to return the favor, kid. And then he does it, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, because I figured he done forgot about that as soon as I walked out the door, you know. And it's probably a year later, whatever, Wahoo. There again, Wahoo got in a fuss with Ole and left. And so the main event was supposed to be Wahoo and Abdullah. So anyway, they asked Abby who he wanted to work with. And Abby said, give me the kid. They all called me the kid. And we went out there, and we'd followed around the building and everything. And he said, slam me, kid. Shoot, I'd probably 220 pounds, maybe soaking wet. And he was 400 or plus, you know, that's back when he was big. He said, slam me. And I thought, he just fixing to embarrass me. I know I can't slam him. Anyway, finally, I reached down and grabbed him. He went up like he weighed 100 pounds. I got him up over my shoulder and I slammed him. That whole building went like, woo. I mean, I still get goosebumps about that today. I mean, and that was another thing, you know, just everybody, you know, what was said was what guys did, you know, it just, each thing made me, you know, more and more getting a tag like guys like Wahoo and Rick Martel. I mean, I teamed up, you know, some of the best other guys too, you know, I mean.
Tommy, there was a reason for that, because you were selling out every damn where you went. You were hot.
Anyway, well, he's all blessed. I mean, we did good. And I'm very humbled by it. I mean, you know, back then I didn't know, you know, what was what really anyway. But now I know that we did draw some big bucks and that I was over really good. You know, just back then it was just fans and of course, you know, you're selling out, but it takes a package. It takes a whole package, I think, too. But we were hot back then. But the 80s was hot, you know, the 80s, you know, so it just was all a blessing to me. And I still, you know, I still proud to just even get to be in there. You know, some people say, you didn't hold that NWA title very long. Well, but I did hold it. And I mean, I'm in a group that with you and the Funks and Dusty and Harley Race. I mean, you know, Harley, man, that was all Harley putting that belt on me then.
Great. I'm glad you brought that up. That was going to be my next question. Kind of walk us through the step. I mean, I honestly got to tell you that when I found out they were putting it on, Jack and I were thrilled to death, but we thought you were going to get a run. Was that the plan all along? Was it just a plan for a short time or what?
See, I don't have a clue. I mean, that's when they had the board and stuff. I mean, that was a lot of Harley's doing. I don't know if he just did it or what the deal was. You know, I mean, Harley taught me so much too.
Well, did Barnett come to you or did Ole come to you? Who broke the news to you?
Actually, Harley told me that night.
That night. Wow, didn't know until that night.
Yeah, I didn't know until that night. Yeah. And I'll never forget, Andre was there, you know. He come down and put me up on his shoulder. I mean, it was, you know, that was a big thing. And I mean, that, you know, that's another landmark too. I mean, just to get to be mentioned as a world heavyweight champion and the names that, you know, that there, you know, that's another honor itself. You know, I've been, you know, like I said, it's just been a great blessing for me to got an opportunity to get in this business and got to do all the things I did get to accomplish.
Now, when it came time to give it back, did you just know they come to you that night and say you're going to give it back tonight?
They let me know we was going to drop it back to Harley and Gainesville, you know. So it was, I guess it was kind of a little shot in my arm. I just know that Harley had a lot to do with it, Mr. Barnett. And I'm sure that some of the other folks, NWA promoters wasn't happy with it. So anyway, it is what it is, but we did it.
Well, Tommy, what it was is you were the hottest guy in the country at that time. So they they used their common sense and their business sense and gave it to you. And just all they did was reinforce what you had already proven to them, that you were the best in the world at that time there. So, man, I, like you say, to be listed, you know, as NWA champion, I mean, when that was the belt that everybody wanted, you know, that was the
champion. Oh, yeah, because, I mean, that was back then. I mean, that was, you know, there wasn't five belts. I mean, the NWA World Heavyweight title, that was the epitome. I mean, that's what, you know, everybody, I mean, you tried to work for. I mean, and to get the opportunity and the chance and then to get to do it and wear the belt, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it just I mean, people ask me, that's one of the greatest things that ever happened. Abdullah the Butcher, I mean, that was a great stepping stone for me. Hiding under the ring in Memphis, you know, I mean, there's been so many things that I've got to be a part of that's just, you know, that still remember today, you know, that it's just a blessing.
And like you were saying to Mr. Barnett, Jim Barnett, to everybody out there, Jim was probably one of the most unique promoters in the entire United States. And you gained his trust and everything. And you guys had a great friendship. Did that friendship last after you left Georgia and after you kind of departed?
Well, we always stayed in contact. I mean, you know, because I never had to go. You know, I'd go to Tennessee for a while and then I'd come back, you know, to Georgia. So I never, you know, them were my two like homes. I mean, other guys had to travel all over the country, you know. I mean, you went to different areas and went to different places. I, you know, I was fortunate. I mean, that Mr. Barnett had interest. But like you said, we drew money then too. So, I mean, so I didn't have to go. I mean, if I hadn't been drawing money, I'm sure I'd have to go somewhere else. But we were drawing money, you know, so it was all good. But Mr. Barnett was always a good man to me. I mean, of course, I ain't never heard nobody say nothing bad about him. I don't know.
No, Jim was a class man, a class guy to work for. But, you know, I find interesting, too, that was towards the end of your career. But the beginning of your career, when you very first started, I was reading something where you worked at your grandpa or your papa's gas station, where everybody stopped to fuel up on the way, and how you got in the business at that time. You want to walk us through that?
Oh, yeah. Well, Eddie Marlin, my dad, they were good friends. And anyway, they both went down to train to the school and was going to try out. Anyway, I guess my dad must have got his ass whooped, and he hung it up that one time. Well, Eddie stuck it out, and I used to go to the wrestling with Eddie and stuff. And I had a job at the Shell, like in high school. I worked at the Shell station, and there was a Gulf station next to us, and all the guys would come over there. And of course, I knew Eddie, and I used to go with Eddie and Tommy Gilbert. I'd go on trips with them and shoot. And you know, you think you're smart, but you ain't. And them bounty hunters would pull up beside them, and they start shooting each other birds and shaking fists at each other. I thought, oh shit, this stuff is gonna break loose before we even get to the town, you know. I mean, I was a believer, you know, but then my mom and dad got a divorce. Jared had me a partial scholarship to Louisville, Kentucky to play football. And anyway, my mom and dad got a divorce and I couldn't afford to go and talk to Jerry. And anyway, they trained me. I wrestled in school a little bit. Anyway, they trained me and Jerry Jett would say, come to my house, be here at this time. I did that for about 2 months, showing up, maybe leaving to go on a wrestling trip every time. He was just trying to run me off is what he was doing, but I kept coming back. Finally, he said, well, hell, we ain't going to run this kid off. So anyway, they trained me, and rest of it, I reckon, is history, you know. But, yeah, I grew up around, like, just going, and even when I was a kid, me and my dad used to go, so. It was, you know, I grew up watching it and being around, and it was just a great honor to be in it.
Was Tojo Yamamoto the one that trained you for Jerry?
Yeah. I'm telling you, I didn't train a whole, yeah. Me and him went to the gym a few times, but we got to Tupelo, Mississippi one night, and they told me I was going to wrestle. And the rest of my training just pretty much come from getting in the ring and wrestling after that, because I wrestled Phil Hickerson first night, and Phil could wrestle good. And me and him, I mean, you know, for my first match, it's a pretty good, you know, good match. Then I wrestled his partner the next night in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Tank Patton. He weighed about 300 pounds. They'd been working about 6 months. And he had two left feet. You know, I had a right and a left, but they wasn't, you know. So anyway, it was one of them people was going, shoo-wee. so I thought maybe this ain't for me. But, you know, I stuck it out and everything, and it all worked out for the best.
Do you ever kind of, you know, you were the hottest guy in the country in the early 80s. Then WrestleMania starts, say, in about the mid 80s. You went up and worked for Vince Sr., but you didn't want to go to New York, did you? I mean, you didn't want to be part of that whole WrestleMania and the travel and everything, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I went up, Mr. Barnett told me, he said, Tommy, my boy, he said, you've got to wrestle in the gardens one time. And that was when the Sr. was alive. And so I went up and wrestled then. I wrestled Johnny Rods, come back and, it just, I, you know, I was a country boy and I was making money at home even after, you know, it shut down. I wrestled for Ann Gunkel some and she paid me good money. So I just, you know, I just never had to leave. And of course, I had a wife and three kids. And you know, like I said, I was a country boy and that was the big city. So I was scared I'd get lost up there, I reckon. I don't know. I look back and maybe I should have gone, maybe I should have, you know, but hindsight don't matter anyway. So I'm happy with what I've done.
And then when Jim Crockett kind of took over, you didn't see that eye to eye with Jim Crockett, did you? Apparently you're good friends with David, but Jim, you would just never.
Yeah, they didn't care too much about me. They thought I was just a wild young kid, I reckon. Well, pretty much was probably right, but I always, always did my job. You know, I mean, if they told me to go 45 minutes, I'd go 45 minutes. If they said go an hour, I could go an hour. You know, I mean, what you did in your private life, they didn't, you know, in Georgia, it didn't matter. You know, just come do your job, and that's all that mattered. So, you know, I think that's why I enjoyed Georgia so much. I mean, it just was it was good. It was a good place for me, man.
Smoky Mountain seemed like kind of the territory that you would like. With Cornette and all the guys there, the kind of geography. Did you enjoy being in Smoky Mountain?
Yeah, Smoky Mountain was cool too. I mean, it was good till it wasn't. I mean, when they quit, you know, couldn't pay the bills and stuff like that, and you got a couple of checks, it wasn't no good. It was, you know, you
always put your damper on things.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
And you never really wanted to be a trainer necessarily. I mean, you got so much knowledge. I would look that match I watched with you and Buzz. That thing was masterpiece. The last battle in Atlanta. You never really wanted to be a trainer. I know you opened up a gym there in Myrtle Beach for a while. Probably the wrong place to open it up, but you never really wanted to be a trainer.
It was a hard market. I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, but it was. You know, Myrtle Beach, it's a great place to vacation, but it's a seasonal place. You know, during the summer, it's jam-packed, and then during the winter, ain't nobody there. So it was a hard market. Plus, I mean, you know, like, say, for instance, Georgia, you got Tennessee, Alabama, and all these other states joined it to where people could come in, whereas there, you had South Carolina, North Carolina was about the only market you could play to, you know. So but I enjoyed it, but it just was, like you said, it was just wasn't a place to have a wrestling school.
Do you ever tell your grandkids or they look at you and you want to tell them I was the hottest thing in the country at one time before you were born, and they're just like, oh, grandpa, just be quiet.
yeah, I got a grandson that lives with me. He finally knows now. He used to kind of shake his head, but now he knows. He said,
He found YouTube.
And stuff.
Jerry found YouTube and found Grandpa all over YouTube.
Oh, yeah. And he sees me going doing these conventions and stuff. Now he's figured, how's an old man like that still going out and making money doing stuff? Yeah, you know. He's cool, man. He's cool.
We had Magnum T.A. on, you know, who hadn't wrestled a match, I guess, since 86 or whenever it was when he had the car wreck. He's just as people remember him as vividly now as, and they a lot of weren't even born. And the same with you. Doesn't that amaze you sometimes that was so long ago? I'm all the same age as you, not near as old as Jerry. Jerry's like 128. But doesn't it amaze you that was decades ago and people still act like it was yesterday? Which is
cool. That's the blessing of it. I mean, like these new guys, they won't have that longevity. You know, they might be one or two, you know, but I mean, shit. The first picture I've seen of Jerry was on tree bark, if people still remember him.
I thought it was at the post office.
That's good. Well, Tommy, thank you so much for coming on with us. I've been looking forward to you coming on ever since Jerry said we had a chance to get you on. This is a real treat. So thank you so much.
Hey, thank y'all. It's a pleasure for me, man. Love reminiscing with them old folks.
Well, Jerry's the other one. Jerry's old folk, and he's mobile, so he looks a lot older than he is.
Tommy, I'll always remember Georgia and just the pleasure of traveling with you. And, you know, you travel with a lot of guys back in our days. You know, we had a lot of road miles together, of road hours together. Some of the guys that you enjoyed with, the trips went by like that. Then you'd have to sit in the car with somebody you had nothing in common with. And then those minutes tick away like years. It takes forever to get into town. But you and I and that group that we had together up in Georgia, and I mean, we took care of business, but we had a hell of a time. We got to know each other. We got to respect each other and each other's family. And you're a guy that I always hold way up there when I list my friends that I really had back in those days. And you're one of the guys at the top of the list. And I always appreciated your friendship. Too. And I always just marveled at your fire. I mean, you know, when you're a babyface, John, you don't know a lot about being a babyface, but you know
I don't.
You were a heel, and you worked with the fiercest babyface ever, Eddie Guerrero. So you know how to build that fire. But working with Tommy Rich was like working with a pre-Eddie Guerrero, because you knew. When the time was right, this guy was going to go, and there wouldn't be an ass on a seat in a 20,000-seat building. And he had them all standing and leaving the ring. It was like Elvis leaving the building. There was a string of people behind him. Like it was such a pleasure back in those days, Tommy, and I really appreciate it. Not only for the cash that you made me, but for the friendship that you gave me.
Hey, one quick story. You remember the night we wrestled in Charleston, West Virginia? Holiday Inn was next to it. I wrestled Buzz. I'd ask that lady, I said, "We fill your bar up? Do we get to drink for free?" And she said, "Yeah." And I told Buzz, sorry, and the building was right next to each other. I told Buzz, I got on that PA, said, "Buzz, after I kick your ass, we're having a party over at Holiday Inn right next door." And we got out of the car, and you're talking about running like rock stars, man. We had to run. There was so many people there, and people were mad at the Holiday Inn. They had to call for extra security. We did get a drink free, but, yeah, they weren't too happy.
And that was the last time we stayed there, too. Well, thank you so much, Tommy. Thank you for taking the time. And thank your lovely wife for getting you on Zoom call. And
okay, I will. Because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have been here.